Hello. Extra time.
Extra time. Extratime.ie.
A quieter season off the pitch, more talking about what's happened on the pitch.
The Extratime.ie eSports Cup continues this week, pitting League of Ireland players against each other at FIFA on our Facebook, Twitter and YouTube pages, with all money donated going towards Cystic Fibrosis Ireland. Check out the link in the podcast bio to donate now.
Hello, extra time.
Very important to the league not to get a hold, because it damages your reputation. It makes people, when they read it, just laugh at you.
Single club, they're playing in the League One, and they're playing in the Europa League, and they're credit the game in this country. Maybe we should let them again to manage the Irish team.
You're very welcome along to the Extra Time at .ie Sportscast. The show goes on despite no access to our studio for the time being, so hopefully this will suffice. Hope you're all keeping well and keeping safe. Thanks for all the messages and feedback coming through on these recent episodes. A lot of people enjoying the book reviews or sort of suggestions we've done the last while, but we've got a beauty for you today, so stay with us for that. As you'd imagine, it's going to get harder and harder and harder to record these with no football. So if there is content you'd like to hear us cover, get in touch. ExtraTimeLive@gmail.com or at ExtraTimeNews on Facebook or Twitter, or you can get me directly at DeckMaron on Twitter. We are pretty much weeks away now at this point from converting this into some sort of Belarusian football podcast, so you may want to get them suggestions in. I'm joined by Tom O'Connor, who, as I mentioned before, goes by at LOI Moontour nowadays on Twitter. Fáilte a Mhaistear, Conas Atá.
Cáir go leor, Eclan. Cáir go leor.
When you're not educating, Tom, how are you keeping yourself entertained or sane at the moment?
I have come up with a strange proposal for myself. A couple of years ago in January, I used to run 5K a day, and I did it a couple of Januaries in a row, and I've decided to do that for April. But I've added in, things have changed since I did it the last time, so I've added in bringing a buggy with me. So for the last 2 days, this is recorded the 2nd of April, so yesterday and today, I've run 5K a day pushing a buggy.
And is so, there any of the children in the buggy, or?
Yeah. I've one co-driver, yeah.
Okay, because otherwise you look like an absolute lunatic at these times. People are going to think you've left your child somewhere.
No, so far, we've done all right. Right. So now I can't promise that there's going to be 31 5K runs with a buggy, because my level of fitness wouldn't be where it was. But look, we'll see what we can do. So that's, yeah, between that and obviously working remotely, you know, connecting with my class, setting them work, and obviously it's not the same face to face or any of that, so obviously I'm still doing that, engage with the class and the parents with lessons and stuff like that, and then obviously with my own kids as well. So I'm keeping busy in a strange sort of way.
To be fair, I'm not one who can judge you for any kind of running, because last, you know, a little while ago I was swearing at Conan Byrne as he was on his way around doing a charity walk, so look, no judgment here. I see a lot of clubs sort of keeping the fans happy enough with sort of excellent videos or redoing old games via Patreon or whatever way they have been. And I know the Shamrock Rovers and their Facebook going through Belgrade in 2011. Well, it's a bit of a European football topic conversation today. We're joined now by Kevin Burke, author of the excellent One Night in Doodle Launch. It gives a fantastic insight to the incredible achievement of UCD getting a little bit of a European run together by beating Luxembourg's F91 Doodle Launch. Kevin, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Declan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Before we sort of get into reliving a few of the games and talking a little bit further on European football for LOI teams in general, I wanted to know, given that you were sort of at all these games, you were at UCD at the time and sort of thereabouts, I think you were writing for the fanzine as well. At what point during this run did you think there's a book to be written here, or was that in the mind at all?
It was about a year after the run, I think, actually. The run happened. I was kind of, UCD's a small enough club, and at some of the away games, as chance would have it, ended up on the drink with a few of the players' families, parents, brothers and all that. And I started hearing some of the little stories that got on in the background, and I thought that was interesting. And about a year later, I said, you know what, maybe there is something to be expanded on here, a full book in it. But it was, I think the first interview I did for it was about 18 months after the campaign.
It was fairly unique as well, in the sense that, I mean, they qualified via the Fair Play Award. So people who don't know that, I think they were, what were they, third or something like that in the Fair Play rankings?
They were the third nicest team in the third nicest league in Europe, and that was good enough to get you in.
Given that they qualified on that, I mean, I think that rule has been done away with since. But even still, it's just so improbable that you qualify through that manner. You're a team that's been relegated as well. A real long shot that any Irish team would have even managed to qualify in those circumstances to have that situation. And it probably makes it less likely that we'll see that recreated, given that rule is gone now.
Yeah, I mean, the fair play is gone for sure. So, I mean, UCD were relegated. They've lost something like 12 first-teamers in the squad and had to build a new team. I think the only time it's happened before that a first-team side has been in Europe is the couple of times when you win the FAI Cup and you get relegated in the same year. And that's tended not to go well for the teams after Bray and Dundalk did it, I think, 15, 20 years ago and got fairly hammered in their European campaigns. So, yeah, it was a particularly unusual event. And it's not going to happen again, I'd say, something like that.
And UCD had been, as I mentioned, had been relegated. You'd have some of the players maybe looking away to other clubs or focusing on their studies at that point. And even, as you mentioned, the book, Colly was only seemingly days away from his third child being born. So conditions were far from perfect, really. Was it very much just a sense of rolling the dice? Because I can't imagine anyone expected anything from that qualification.
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the season when they were building the new team, well, they weren't in Europe. They knew it was a kind of an outside chance, but you're building a team, and are you building a team to kind of be competitive in the first division, or are you building a team to win a European match? And they're two very different things. But they have just put Europe on the side. It wasn't announced. It was a possibility. That was it. So you're just trying to build a team. As I said, a lot of the guys have moved on. They finished their college degrees, went to other clubs, stayed in the Premier Division, and so on. So the team was very much cobbled together from what was left of the 19s. You guys coming into the college and all the rest of it. And then, I think about 3 months into the season, UEFA said, actually, you're going to be in the Europa League next month, just kind of catapulted the whole thing to a new level.
Given that you had quite a lot of access, I can't imagine too many people made the journeys over or there would have been a whole lot of media covering a lot of this. Although, there was always going to be an element, but I imagine you got quite a lot of access to the players, as is seen in the book. But Is the fact that the lads were students, not 100% pro as a lot of other teams would sort of be well set up, well media trained at this point. Here's the party line to toe. Was that an excellent addition for you, given the lads were probably happy enough to chat about anything?
It's strange. You're right. I mean, I think the League of Ireland in general, that was great. If you go somewhere to listen about this project, people sit down and chat to you. I suppose you steal your chickens. The first person I went to was Colly. I grabbed him coming out of the dressing room after a 1-0 home defeat against a playoff rival when he'd just been lambasting the dressing room out of it for 15, 20 minutes. And I grabbed Holmes and said, Colly, thinking of doing a book on the European games. Do you have any interest in having a chat about it? He said, yeah, great idea. Changed his mood entirely. And once he had Colly in, well, all the rest of the guys were kind of quite happy to follow in. But you're right. These guys, they are just college students when it comes down to it. Most of this team were in college. They were maybe doing their leaving cert, looking to go into college. They just finished college. And they're just ordinary punters. I mean, anybody, I was in college. I played for UCD at some of the various sports way down the list. And there's really no difference. Just ordinary punters, ordinary guys who suddenly got catapulted into the Europa League and suddenly started playing World Cup players.
I suppose, Tom, you were the one who reviewed the book on extratime.ie. I imagine there's parts of it that are lodged in your brain as a result of that. Is there characters specifically stood out to you or elements of the book, bar, I suppose, the massive victory and the celebrations that went after?
Yeah, I suppose, like Kevin said, it was nearly a mishmash of players coming through from 19s, from students, that kind of crack. And I suppose the preparations for the game, there's a couple of lovely little anecdotes in the story. I referenced it in the book review, the likes of a certain who was a youth teamer at that stage. He'd played no part in the tie, but has gone on to establish himself as a Premier Division player now, getting lost in Burger King.
Mm.
It's a story that, in Burger King at the airport, you have a European, you've a squad ready to go on a big European tie. They're in the airport, they're all together, and they can't find this guy because he's away off in Burger King. Whenever stories come out from Pep's Man City and Klopp's Liverpool in 10 or 15 or 20 years, that's not the kind of story that we're going to hear about, I'd imagine.
And I think it comes back to kind of Declan's point. I mean, these guys are college students, and there was an innocence about the whole thing. The guys weren't naive at all. I mean, they trained very hard for it. They essentially went full time. They put a lot of effort into it. But they were really there to really go out and enjoy it. And there was no media training. There was no idea as to what was the right thing to do, what was the wrong thing to do. You look at when we're off in Slovan Bratislava, the afternoon of the match, which was an 8:15 kickoff, the guys are sitting around the hotel and they're just bored. And the two most experienced players on the side, Robbie Benson, the captain, and Mark Langtry, decide, you know what, bored of this, going to go for a walk down the town. 3 o'clock on match day, going down the town in full club gear, club tracksuits, into Tesco's, and some of the Slovan fans, of course, recognise who they are, what the jerseys are, and they come over to start giving absolute dog's abuse about how much they're going to get absolutely hammered that evening. And the guys are going, this is... I hadn't expected this. This is a fairly serious match we're up against now tonight.
I love the idea of team news coming up, telling you who's available, not available, and you see ineligible due to being lost in Burger King there as part of the team news. That would be a first, like.
But funny there, Kevin, when you're saying about the likes of Robbie Benson and Mark Langtry going down the town. Obviously, people know that Robbie Benson now has, you know, he's still playing the Premier Division, but he has his Masters under his belt, whereas the likes of Mark Langtry is now working in the science, you know, the National Science Museum and Explorium. The likes of Samir Balut is researching in chemistry, and, you know, he's a postdoctoral researcher in chemistry. Whereas the likes of the guys who they were playing at the day, the likes of Robert Vitek and Jan Muka, like Muka went on, ended up playing in the Premiership for Everton. So it was like, well, you say they weren't naive and they did put in the hard yards training, and absolutely the career trajectory, for want of a better word, after that European adventure, the Slovaks went on to have more distinguished playing careers. So it was interesting to see that the squad, that both teams could be so close for both nights. Like the second leg only went away from UCD maybe in the last half hour, last even 20 minutes or so.
It was 5 minutes from time when the goal was scored. I mean, you're right. It's one of the great things about European games is these kinds of, I don't call them mismatches, but unusual pairings where you have a team of college students. And even, I think, the fact that it's college students just makes the whole story more accessible, because, you know, we've all been there. We've all, you know, gone to various third-level institutions of whatever kind. We can all associate with being in first arts or whatever and playing a bit of football for the college. It's not as easy to kind of put yourself in the shoes of even being a Dundalk player or a Bowes player, because that's a much more serious level up. And Europe puts up these unusual matches. And yet there they were, 85 minutes. Vitek, who was like the second top scorer of the 2010 World Cup, being marked by Tomás Boyle, who just finished his health science degree. You, Vitek, because he signed him in Championship Manager. These are the little stories that it throws up. And all these little anecdotes was, I think, what really ultimately prompted me to write the book and squeeze as many of those in as I could.
And even there, as you mentioned, Boyle's now, he's coaching soccer in Texas, which is literally and figuratively a world away from the Europa League, from that adventure he had 5 years ago. And even
absolutely, but he'll have taken some of his big game experience into that. I mean, you know, it's not every club where you find that the experience of playing in Europe actually helps you with your day job as well. He's got to be a football coach, and he's really taken a lot of experience from that on board, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it's massive. Like, it's only when you look back now and you look at the, you know, I know we're going to talk about it in a few minutes, the European adventures that other clubs have had, and maybe the more high-profile campaigns, maybe the likes of the Rovers 2011 Europa League campaign or Dundalk's 2016 campaign, that you realise that how big an achievement it was for UCD to beat Dude Lounge and then to run the likes of Bratislava, who, I know we've seen recently, are quite a decent outfit still, to run them absolutely so close.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Dude Lounge have been in the group stages the last 2 years. So that's, you know, the person that did it was not this season, but last season. They still had 9 players on the side that lost to UCD. And they're playing in the group stages. They got a draw off Real Betis, I think it was, one of the Spanish sides. I think one of the little things that comes out in the book then is even the reaction of the players at the end of this match, when you have, you know, UCD out there in Bratislava, under the lights, on television, 3,000-4,000 people on the ground. And they're playing guys, Mucha, as you mentioned, Vitek, Salata, who played in the Premier League, played in the World Cup. And the reaction of the Slovan guys at the end to the UCD players, they realised they've been in a hell of a game. Very kind of, you know, Jan Mucha came over to Niall Corbett, goalkeeper, and just said to him, "You fucking good team, you good team." And, you know, these are the reactions, just very, very different to an ordinary league game.
What it probably shows up is the benefits, I suppose, of what a team like UCD can achieve when I said conditions were unfavourable, but I suppose in a way they were favourable given the quality of player and all. But it probably, your book also does show the sort of contrast to that, because I think I'm right in saying, I heard you mention this, all right, that I think had UCD maybe through another round, they would be due to travel to Russia like 3 days, 4 days after this, with no sort of plans or no preparation done for anything like that, and that essentially would have likely been impossible to fulfill that fixture. And I suppose that's something we want to touch on a broader scale here, because your book touches a lot on the difficulties a team like UCD face when they're not playing in Europe regularly, but they have to plan for something like this. I mean, can you give us a little bit of a lowdown of how prepared they were or weren't?
Yeah, I mean, that story you give there is a very good example. And this would not just be UCD, this would be any League of Ireland team in Europe. The idea was, you go along to the first round draw, the first two rounds are made the same day. So we were paired against Dudelange. We were lucky that we were home first in the first leg, which is only 10 days after the draw. And then we're away to Dudelange in the next game, the next week. So you have about a fortnight to get in place, a whole trip to Luxembourg. Luxembourg had just got presidency of the EU. The flights were booked out. Everyone was going there. Hotels were booked out. Something like 22 grand was the stay for everybody in a hotel for one night. You win the game unexpectedly, realistically, and suddenly you've got to be in Bratislava 7 days later. So that's another little tricky one. How do you arrange that? But the third round, just a good bit of detail on that, the draw for the third round was made the day after the second round first leg, when we'd lost 1-0 out in Bratislava. And we were drawn against Krasnodar of Russia. And the first leg was the week after the return leg against Slovan. So the return leg against Slovan was on the Thursday. And whoever won that had to be in Krasnodar the following Thursday. Now, UCD, with the best will in the world, we knew we weren't going to beat Slovan. But we were only 1-0 down. You know, the keeper gets sent off 10 minutes in, concedes a penalty, it's 1-1. You just don't know. So you've got to put all in prep, all the paperwork to go out to Russia. You've got to get the visas. You've got to talk to the Russian team. You've got to get your flights booked, all the rest of it. You needed to be in the airport on Tuesday because it needed 3 flights to get out to Krasnodar. So you had Friday, Monday, and that was it to arrange the match. So actually all the players have Russian visas in their passports that were never used because they had to go to the embassy and get them all. The Krasnodar needed to give a letter of invitation to get to Russia. Krasnodar ignored UCD. UCD on repeatedly saying, as you know, we're due to play with the third round of the Europa League next week, possibly. Can you please give us a letter of invitation so we can go to the Russian embassy and get our visas in place just in case it comes off? Nothing. So in the end, the club officials actually, not far off, had to blackmail Krasnodar, really strong-armed them with a threat to go public at the World Cup draw with what they were doing. And only then did they actually get the visas. The visa being put through on match day, the day of the Slovan game. The assistant manager decided not to actually process his own visa. He said he didn't have time. He didn't think we were going to do it, but he didn't have time. He wasn't a priority. And he said if we actually went and won that match, he was going to have to get up the next morning, 7 o'clock, go down to the Russian embassy and beg to be let go to the third round. So there are just some of the issues that face you in any European campaign when the games are coming one after the other, really rapid fire, completely different ends of the continent.
I imagine it's a drop in the ocean in terms of sort of scandals or dirt that would be pushed towards Russia's sports at around that time, or maybe a little bit after. But
not the top of the list for sure.
But I suppose, as you say there, that's kind of a regular problem. It reminds me, I was talking to Tom just before we started this, of our fellow Extra Time that he reported, Mac Dara Ferris, Tala Time, in his book, and he details the sort of Shamrock Rovers chairman, Jonathan Roach, and other officials trying to get to Monaco about 16 hours after they'd won, beaten Partizan Belgrade, and they had to get over for the UEFA draw. I'm trying to think, even from Dundalk's recent one, I don't remember too many stories coming out on that. I'm sure as a Dundalk fan, you won't be keen to throw them under the bus, but I can't think of too many scheduling or you know, sort of planning problems like that, certainly from the group stages anyway?
We'll see. Yeah, like, look, with the advantage of the group stages is that, you know, once you get as far as the group stages, you have your six fixtures laid out. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, 2 or 3 months in advance. I think once the victory over Bate in the second leg, then even though you knew, you'd a free shot against Legia, I know there was obviously an awful lot of stuff on in the background to try and get a negotiation with the FAI and with all that to try and get the Aviva for the second leg of the first leg of the Legia game. But beyond that, then they knew that no matter what happened, you had at least 6 games of the Europa League stage if you were knocked out or you were going on to Champions League. So you knew that there was games going on ahead. It wasn't a case of we kind of have to plan one game in advance. You knew that you would have had a programme of events to plan out. And I know, like you say, I mean, obviously there was the trip to Zenit, which needed Russian visas and all that, but you would have been able to plan that bit further ahead because, like, unlike the Krasnodar visa issue you mentioned there, there wasn't a week turnaround. There was the fact that, right, you have this element of planning. But, I mean, Dundalk landed back. That still didn't stop. Dundalk landed back, I think, on the Friday and having to play the FAI Cup final on the Sunday. You know, so even though from a European point of view, the travel arrangements and all that kind of crack were as smooth as you can expect, when you were coming back domestically, the domestic calendar doesn't necessarily fit in with the European run as that FAI Cup final. I mean, the showpiece event of the year, and Dundalk are landing back 2 or 3 days beforehand, and Cork City are at the peak of their powers. So what had the potential to be maybe one of the games of the decade, maybe, you know, without meaning to throw too fine on a point on it, it would have been, you know, it had the potential to be a superb showpiece event. Unfortunately, forever be marked, you know, while Cork City fans undoubtedly will celebrate, and rightly so, because the Cork side that year were, you know, they were on the cusp of something really special, which they saw the following year. That 2016 final will be remembered as the final that Dundalk turned up wrecked because of their European exploits.
I think that'll always be the case domestically, unless this new FAI have some sort of brand new, wonderful plan that's going to sort out our scheduling. Because as you said, even regardless of Europe, we have terrible schedule problems here. Are we miles off of it being achievable? And this can go to the both of you, actually, whoever wants to come in first on this. But are we miles off of being achievable that outside of arrangements we can't maybe help, like we're not financially set up to do a whole lot of travel arrangements, like booking planes like a lot of other clubs do, or sort of accommodation arrangements? Are we miles off of being at least a bit more attainable, a bit more achievable, i.e. sort of having scouting prepared, having licensing prepared, having coaching licensing prepared, all that kind of stuff?
I mean, you've kind of different size clubs in the league as well. Dundalk and Rovers will have more capacity than your UCD to deal with. UCD had one full-time employee, two committee members, 3 committee members doing the work. Dundalk and Rovers probably have the extra capacity in there to be able to deal with it a lot more comfortably. Your Premier League clubs, of course, will have departments dedicated to licensing and departments dedicated to scouting. But I'd say Dundalk and Rovers would be able to manage the logistics of it. Even if, as Tom says, just because you can manage the logistics of it doesn't mean they aren't really, really awkward at times.
Yeah, no, I think like Kevin says, you're still going to have the haves and the have-nots. You're going to have the clubs who will be able to manage. You know, I think we're going to, you know, this discussion's going to kind of move towards the third European competition. And I think I wrote a piece in August or so looking at, it was shortly after Dundalk went out of Europe last year, and people were questioning whether they overachieved or underachieved. So I basically crunched a few numbers based on UEFA club rankings and all that kind of crack. And to get into the group stages of the Europa League, you need to be beating a team in the top 150 of the UEFA club rankings. And that generally, obviously, with rankings doesn't happen. So I can't remember the exact fraction, but it's a one in 64 or something. I don't know. I'm throwing that off the top of my head. It's basically quite a low. You have to basically beat the odds twice to get into the group stages. So, I mean, if you're looking at being in the Premier Division, and you're already looking that you're going to have to break the stranglehold of Dundalk and Rovers at the minute at the top of the table. Below that, then you have a group fighting for Europa League places. The reality is that their focus has to be on, like, that's quite a competitive area from maybe third to fifth in the league at the minute. So your focus has to be, while Dundalk and Rovers can kind of look, and Dundalk are quite bullish about it at times to say that, you know, we're looking at Europe as the focal point of our season. I mean, and Rovers can do the same as well. But the likes of Pats, Bowes, Derry aren't that far away from the rest of the division to be able to say, look, we can put our eggs in a European basket and the league will take care of itself. So in terms of logistics and in terms of in the background, those clubs have to focus on what's in front of them first. So until they get a pattern of qualifying consistently for Europe, I think we're going to always see teams who, like in UCD, maybe not quite as hodgepodge is the wrong word, it's not giving UCD credit, but and even they were just throwing Europe a couple of months in advance, whereas if the league finishes in October, you know that it's the following June when you're going to be in European action. So you have months to prepare, whereas UCD didn't have that. So
6-7 weeks. No, you're right. There's a big difference,
So I don't think, now maybe in a couple of years, if Ireland, the League of Ireland, gets extra qualifying slots for the European Conference League, then you might see clubs might go, right, listen, we know we're going to be guaranteed top five or whatever it is, then let's throw an eye on Europe and see if we go from there. But until something like that happens, I don't think that the Europe and the League of Ireland are going to be naturally fitting together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And just as you've mentioned it there, I suppose we better jump on the Europa Conference League, because I imagine a lot of people will have forgotten about this between, you know, the current situation, what's going on, between all the talk around the All-Ireland League. I mean, we're talking about next season having a new European competition going hand in hand, I suppose, with the Europa League downsizing a bit as well. So while it will look a little bit more achievable, it'll also take away, I suppose, in a way. I remember a lot of writing at the time about how the Scottish clubs are going to suffer quite badly, bar the champions, because, you know, you'd have a few more teams, the likes of, I don't know, who was in this year, Hibs and Aberdeen, teams like that, who may have been in with a chance of doing a few Europa League qualifiers. They're more likely to be pushed down to this third tier, which is, as we said, the Europa Conference League. So we're still a bit sketchy on details, I should point out as well, as to how each team, each national association is supposed to decide how teams will qualify for this in a way. So we've not had any details on this since it was announced. I think England have mentioned the Carabao Cup winner is going to get in there. So there's a lot of question marks over, but I do think it's all right to speculate and talk a little bit about this, because while we're still asking questions about it, I don't think we're 100% whether it's quite good or bad from a League of Ireland perspective. It probably does mean reduced prize money in a way, but increases the possibility of a European run. Kevin, I suppose your book is one of those chronicles of a sort of seismic League of Ireland European shock, and lets us kind of dive into a good story like that. So in a way, it's good news in that regard, that there's a chance that we'll have more of these moments. Should we be pretty happy about that, or a little bit more worried, do you think, about maybe the wealthiest teams are going to dominate the big European competitions, and this might just be something for the rest of us to track?
You're right. Yeah, it's, I mean, we don't know the details, and of course with coronavirus now, we don't even know the details of the current season, and everything could get pushed back. The current season could be qualifying for this competition, and so on. How's it going to work? I'll tell you, one of the things that kind of, I think it's an interesting competition. One of the things that disappointed me a bit was that there's no extra places in Europe for the League of Ireland. So we're still going to have the four teams, as far as I'm aware. And I think it was a chance just to extend. I think one thing that's comes out of the book is exploring what makes the European nights so great. And I think anybody who's followed a club in Europe will know that European nights are really special for the club. And this seems to have been a chance to give more clubs access to those special nights, and they seem to have missed out on that. I think that's a pity. You're then coming down to the balance of which is better. You take Dundalk, you know, playing Legia Warsaw. That's a absolutely fantastic occasion. The stadium that was used was fantastic. The players are world class. You're playing for a chance to be the Champions League. You're really losing that chance, I think, and you're trading for the possibility of going three or four rounds beating more modest opponents, and that's there's something to be said for that as well. So you've got a trade-off there. One shot at the big team or a shot at three or four matches in the European run. Which would you rather?
I think that's a good point Kevin makes, but it's also from, without meaning to draw another sport into it, but if you look at the likes of the GAA, where you're bringing a back door into the championship, so now, whereas clubs, originally it would have been Champions League, then you're knocked out, then you're gone out of Europe. Now then, over the last few years, it's been Champions League, knockout, then you have the Europa League, maybe the group stages then to fall back on. Now you're providing an extra cushion to soften the blow of being knocked out of the Europa League. So my fear would be that the likes of Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers, their stated aim would be to make the group stages of the Europa League, or in a dream world, or in a, you know, if everything fell into place, the group stages of the Champions League. Now, even if you don't achieve the playoff round of the Champions League or the Europa League group stages, now you're still going to get a European bonus, so to speak, for not alone for qualifying for Europe, but every stage you go through, you're going to get your bonus. You bring that back to the League of Ireland, and all of a sudden, the gap that's there between the rest of the league and the top two is suddenly increasing year on year and year. And I mean, look, you see what's happened over in England in the Premier League. You see those teams who are chasing European places, that they're speculating to accumulate money in order to get it back from European run. Like, you look at the likes of, you know, the likes of Arsenal, whose sole purpose for the last 5 or 6 years hasn't been silverware, but it's been to get European run, to get the European money in. And that's, I don't know, for me, that's not somewhere I'd like to see football in Ireland going, that I wouldn't like, even though, you know, I'm based in the
North. Right. And it almost seems inevitable, and it's not Dundalk or Shamrock Rovers' fault or such. They're clearly the two biggest clubs in the country at the moment, and they are out there to try and improve themselves and to try and you know, win the league, qualify for Europe and so on. But I think it is inevitable that Dundalk and Rovers will start dominating the league for the next few years. And where does that leave the League of Ireland? Do the FAI step in and say, do you know what, lads, we're going to take some of your European money, we're going to redistribute that for a fairer league, so that domestically you've got stronger opponents, and that's going to push you further in Europe? You know, is that an option? I don't know.
You've raised an interesting question even on the finance element of it, because again, we're speculating a little bit on what kind of finances this Europa Conference League will have, but I can't imagine it will be anywhere near matching what we've seen in previous years. So say a team like Dundalk, who had a great windfall from all of their efforts in Europe, it may not pay the same kind of dividends we thought previous. So even if there is a team, say your teams below Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk, that qualify, they won't be able to now match what the teams above them have previously done, because the same kind of cash won't be available.
Yeah, and then it comes down to, well, getting knocked out in the first round of the Europa League is worth, what, 240, 250? Minus your expenses, of course, but if you're in this Conference League, is there more of a chance that you're going to get maybe 100 grand per round, but you can get through three rounds, and that kind of balances itself out? You just don't know. And that's all definitely up in the air. And I wouldn't like to be doing League of Ireland club budgets for the next couple of years, because there's so many unknowns there at the moment. It's very tricky.
And we still don't know how teams are going to qualify. I suppose I'll open it up and say to you guys, how would you like to see teams qualify in that regard? Because, Kevin, anything to be said for awarding it to the winner of a new League of Ireland fair play table? We might even get a sequel to your book.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I've put in is, you're right, that the fair play is gone. And what the fair play did essentially was take three random teams from around Europe and put them into the Europa League. And Dermot Keighley was one in the newspaper who was giving out yards about this. And he said, you know, well done, UCD, for not kicking people. And, you know, UCD are rubbish, but they're in the Europa League. They've embarrassed the league and all the rest of it. And you know, so what? If we're talking about redistributing funds around Europe, why shouldn't you just give a couple of clubs random spots into Europe? Wouldn't have to be, you know, one from the League of Ireland every year, but there's certainly no harm in picking a random club across Europe and just putting them in, drawing them out of a hat, putting them in. The reality is, I think if there's still going to be four teams in Europe, it's going to be the league winners, the FAI Cup winners, and the next two in the league. I think if you're not increasing the number of European spots, you can't really tinker about with the current European qualifications.
That's true. And Tom, you know my love for the Iron Brew Cup. Any grow for putting a European place on that?
Maybe not exactly the Tunnocks tea cake caramel shortbread wafer.
I forgot international. Tunnocks is Scottish.
Look, Iron Brew and Tunnocks tea cake would be both very welcome on a day like today. But I think it'd be interesting, maybe something like, I don't know, maybe the FAI Cup winners and the League Cup winners to play off for another fight. You know, just to bring a bit of spice. Because imagine Derry had landed third in the league a couple of years ago, and the League Cup, they'd won the League Cup. So Cove would now be in Europe if the League Cup winners were. You know, I think it would kind of bring up the profile of something like the League Cup. I know Dave Donnelly would love to see the Leinster Senior Cup winners represent the League of Ireland, but I think for whatever my hypothesis of the FAI Cup winners versus the League Cup winners is far-fetched, I think the Leinster Senior Cup winners representing Ireland in Europe is probably a little too far. But no, I think like the likes of the League Cup, we've seen a lot of clubs, maybe I don't want to use the word weakened teams, but what should we say, use a lot of their squad members or their squad members who don't maybe get regular football. So it might be nice to place a greater importance on that. I know in the FAI Cup, I mean, look, Dundalk have been the final for the last, since 2014, and it was Dundalk Cork for 4 or 5 years in a row. That the chances are, the odds, I'd love to be wrong, but the odds are that it'll be Dundalk against Rovers maybe for the next couple of years. So bringing the League Cup into it, it might give teams something extra to play. I don't know. It just might freshen it up a little bit, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative is you could even have a playoff between third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, because God knows in Ireland we love an L playoff, we love a one-off match for something. And you could say, well, it'd be unfair for a team to be third in the league and get knocked out, miss out in a European spot for the team that comes sixth in the league. But your third in the league is 1-0. It doesn't necessarily deserve to be in Europe itself. So why not have a bit of a playoff, a bit of extra spice towards the end of the season, a couple of high-profile matches? I don't know.
That's turning into the first division playoff concept.
Well,
again.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that, you know. Weirdly enough, I'm a fan. I think that would be excellent. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. Kevin, thanks again for coming on. That book we mentioned was One Night in Doodlelands. If people are interested in grabbing the book, can they still grab it online?
They can. Amazon or the publisher's website, Vision SP, visionsportspublishing.co.uk. You can buy both there while the postal services still work, I suppose.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Kevin.
Yep, cheers.
And there's kind of a lot of grumbling about maybe we don't have enough Premier League players, but in terms of the Championship,
But what's the point in grumbling about it?
But the step
I can't hold about it, can I? If they're not playing the Premier, what's the point of me grumbling?
But the step up to international football in the Championship, is it easily managed?
Well, I'll tell you about when we played in 2002. What's the point of grumbling? We had lads who were all at the bottom of the Premier League, real scrapping away, Kinson, Matty Holland and Gary Breen, who hadn't even got a club. What's the point of grumbling? So, I don't subscribe to that, you know, you just... Whatever it is, whatever I've got, I'll get them together and make the best of them and try and make sure we qualify. Grumbling is not one of the things I do.
You can subscribe to each new episode of the ExtraTime.ie Sportscast on iTunes. Please give a rating or add a comment there to let us know your views.
Joining me now on the line, Dave Donnelly. Dave, how are you keeping?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, good. After, first bit of conversation, really, for a few days. I've had the partner's dog keep me company here, so it's good to actually have some human conversations with yourselves, with Kevin, with Tom, and now with you. And myself and yourself are going to pick up a little bit on what's going on in the extra time cycle, because some great stuff there at the moment. But first, I wanted to do a bit of discussion on how football in general is moving on, because I think last time we talked, we were very much in the dark. That was weeks ago. I would say we're not totally out of that yet. UEFA are doing a video call over end of the season across 52 countries. So that's going to be... occasionally our connection will let us down. Imagine that across 52 countries. Or even, wasn't there that viral video of that poor girl having the sort of toilet mishap where she took her phone with her into the bathroom thinking she turned Zoom off? So the UEFA delegates, I want to be careful there. But we don't really know at the moment if this season has been completely abandoned. You were saying, I know, for example, Denmark have said one thing and there's yet to be anything to come out from UEFA.
Yeah, well, I don't want to say too much at risk of dating this call because it might be completely different by the time we finish talking. But as we knew, Euro 2020 has been postponed for a year. Euro 2021, even though they're going to keep on calling it Euro 2020. Olympics is off, Wimbledon's off, Punchestown's off, Fairy House is off. All these things are off. It looks like the Danish FA came out and said that next year's Women's Euro 2021 has also been postponed for a year. We haven't heard anything about that quite yet from UEFA. All the underage tournaments have either been cancelled or postponed, including the under-19 Euros, which is supposed to be in Belfast this summer. It's been postponed for now, but may well be cancelled as well. So, yeah, an awful lot of events have kind of, they've basically prepared that there's going to be no sort of no international representative tournaments this summer anyway. It looks like it's hard to see the Europa League and the Champions League qualifying round starting in late June the way they usually do. And quite a few leagues probably won't finish at this point. The Belgian League have now come out and said that they've ended the league early, and Bruges have been awarded the title, and that expected to happen over a few leagues. Certainly, the second tier leagues across Europe, and certainly probably the third tier leagues ones as well. But I think just being on the summer season, maybe the League of Ireland will be a little bit different. But I foresee an awful lot of curtailed or truncated seasons with titles awarded.
I was going to ask you about that. Are you one of those people who believes that they should, being off this season, completely act like it never happened? Because I was thinking, is it really all that key to start the 2021 season in time with all this? Can we not just go with this season and however long it takes us to finish it? Because I see a lot of people very much, specifically talking about the English league when it comes to Liverpool winning the title or whatever. But say, for example, in that league, you've got teams like, I don't know, Aston Villa or someone down the bottom who have apparently been quite vocal and wanting the season called off. And you're sort of giving all these sides a do-over when really they don't really deserve it, you know? I would have thought, given that we're... And it applies to the league here. As you said, it's slightly different. But if we were in that kind of case, I'm not sure I'd be all that happy as a side looking to be promoted or any of that. I know this is all in the grand scheme of what's going on, but come on, like, surely... There's no need to just absolutely bin this off, is there? Can we not just elongate this season?
It's hard to know because, as it stands, I think different places across Europe will probably have different time frames for when they're going to come out of this crisis, if they come out of this crisis anytime soon. So I'm not sure exactly how everything's going to be coordinated. It might just be a case where, leagues will finish when they can, if they can, and if they can't, they just sort of... I suppose put a line under it and move on. But I think, the likes of, as you say, Aston Villa or West Ham or whatever, talking about the league should be scrapped when they coincidentally are set to go down. And, it's worth an awful lot of money to them and stuff like that, to self-interest involved. But I don't know. I suspect across most of the elite leagues anyway, I think the main appetite there would be to finish them if at all possible. And I think in general, the Champions League later rounds probably complicate that a little bit for some leagues, but I think in terms of the overall picture, the smaller leagues certainly would be more exposed to any sort of financial difficulty from not finishing the league. So I think it's going to be a difficult time for a lot of countries, but I don't know, again, I'd say Ireland might maybe be a little bit insulated from that, in the sense that there is the possibility there to stretch out the league maybe towards Christmas or after if necessary. So, I see the main problem is probably for those different European leagues rather than the Irish one. So yeah. I wouldn't really worry about us too much right now. I think the season is definitely going to be obviously shorter than it was, but there's bigger problems to come for those bigger leagues, and particularly in terms of how you balance the big leagues with the money and the smaller leagues maybe that don't have too much.
Yeah, as I said at the start, we're well prepped for this given you look at the likes of Sligo, was it last season, the season before, going about 11 weeks without a home game. So look, we've been training for this. In terms of other news, it all seems to be about whether Mick McCarthy or Stephen Kenny is going to be our manager for the Euro 2020 qualifiers, which have been postponed now. Nice to see for for even the very last thing John Delaney did that some people originally thought was a good idea. Nice to see that's blown up in retrospect and has become a huge problem. It's sort of fitting with his overall legacy, I would have said. But what are your thoughts on this one? At the moment, I'd be Team Kenny for getting him in, but that's just because I wanted him in the job in the first place. I didn't see the point in Mick taking part-time ownership of the job. But I think it's more likely Mick probably holds on to it, and I think that has been suggested. I see Richie Sadler talking on RTE this morning, saying both will feel they have a legal right to it. I would have thought Stephen Kenny would be at a disadvantage there. If he thinks he has a legal right to that, that's not really a great way to be going into the beginning of his tenure as Ireland manager.
Yeah, it's hard to know because we don't know how the contracts are written. It seems that Stephen Kenny's contract is August 1st. And it seems that maybe Mick McCarthy's contract is until the end of Euro 2020 with no set date on that. And I don't know whether that means that he is legally in the job until 2020 and he has to get paid, his original contract up until then, or if it's a fixed rate contract that will only be paid over the course of the contract. I don't know. I don't even know whether it would suit Mick McCarthy to spend another year out of club management. I don't know if that's what he wants either. So it's difficult to know exactly what's going to happen or what the optimal situation would be. And it's also difficult to know what exactly the legal situation is, as you sort of hinted at there. But I think you'd suspect, having hired Mick McCarthy for the duration of this campaign, they'll try to keep him in that job. But maybe it won't. Maybe, you know, if it is a situation where he'd get paid the same amount of money over another year, maybe that wouldn't suit him. Or if it's a situation where they'd need to negotiate a new contract, perhaps on a lower wage or whatever, maybe that wouldn't suit him either. And he also had the situation where I don't think Stephen Kenny, after having taken the backseat for 2 years, is going to be all that willing to I suppose, stand down and allow it to be pushed out another 12 months. He, you know, is a very, headstrong individual, and somebody's not going to, you know, sit back and be pushed to the sidelines or relegated in that situation. So it's going to be interesting, in terms of the power dynamics there, and I guess just in terms of if it does get messy, if it does get legal, how the FAI deals with that. And it's I think if you look across the country at the moment, if you look across most football fans, I don't think an awful lot of people would be too upset to see Mick McCarthy go, even though he has, I think, until now done a good job in difficult circumstances. But I just think the appetite might be there, and if the current FAI are sort of looking at the public and sort of trying to win a few favors, they might be looking in terms of maybe bringing in Stephen Kenny, which obviously from their end is a risk as well, but it might just be one that they're willing to take.
Lastly, let's talk a bit about what's going on the site extratime.ie at the moment, because we've been doing our best to keep this show going and to try and keep sort of book recommendations, podcasts. I can see all the clubs, as I mentioned earlier, doing a lot of old matches on Facebook and sort of Patreons. I see Pats are just starting one up. And I noticed as well, actually, Cork have released a pretty nice looking red jersey for 2020. So do your best to get involved and support clubs whatever way you can there. But on the website, we are doing our best to keep you entertained. I see a few quizzes. I think that was your area, Dave. You're doing a few of them. James Hendicott as well, putting up an excerpt from his book, Football for the Forgotten, which we talked about quite some time ago. Would hugely recommend that. And Andrew Dempsey, I just read it there before we were coming on air, had a great piece on Longford Town's maiden voyage to Europe under Stephen Kenny in the early 2000s. So I'll definitely be jumping back in on that one, Andrew, in the next few weeks. But how are we going on the site? Is the Extra Time Machine as well?
The Extra Time Machine, yeah, that's been going fairly well over the last little while. I believe we'll have a game on Friday night as well. But we've been keeping our Wicks in the game. Like Dara particularly going back in the time machine a couple of times, back to classic Shamrock Rovers games, and Simon O'Gorman going back to classic, I don't know what you call it, relegation four pointers back in the 1980s. But it's something a little bit different, I suppose, and you have to be a little bit creative in these times when there's no actual football going on, unless it's doing a live commentary on the Belarusian Premier League or the Paraguayan prison football with Ronaldinho.
What's a relegation four pointer? Have you missed football so long that you're making up terms? It should be six pointers.
Simon covered a game from 1985 between Simon O'Gorman from 1985 between Shelburne and Galway United. Last day of the season, after all the other games have been played, Shelburne needed to win in order to avoid relegation. Sligo Rovers or the other team. So a little bit of a joke there, considering it was only 2 points for a win back then.
No, I should have remembered that actually, because we had this exact problem when we talked about Sam Allardyce's Limerick tenure when he you know won the league and it was only 2 points and all that kind of crack. What about yourself? You're getting a few quizzes going. What's the latest there? I haven't actually taken part in too many because I'm usually pretty awful at this kind of thing.
Yeah, well, first of all, Brendan Graham had a kind of a multi-sports thing, 30 questions, fairly difficult one from what I can gather. A lot of GAA questions and stuff on there. It looks like we'll try and keep the kind of the multi-sports thing going on as well, but we've had a few League of Ireland quizzes this week as well. I had one on Wednesday, just, you know, so I was looking back over the past what is it now, 35 years since the League of Ireland was split into two leagues, the 24 teams that have represented well themselves in the Premier Division over the past 35 years, and seeing who could get the lot, and a few people seem to manage to be able to do that. And just on Thursday, I put up one for the 24. Just a coincidence, it's 24 as well. The players that scored 5 goals or more in the Premier Division last year, there's 24 of those from all the different clubs. So if anybody can fancy their chances of getting on and getting into that, let me know how they got on as well. We'll be looking to expand the quiz side of the website over the next few days and try to make it more prominent and more easy to access, because I know people are incredibly bored being inside at the moment, and so to test your knowledge might be handy.
I haven't a hope of stuff like that, but best of luck to anyone that does. I see you're a man supporting Finn Harps as well now. How did that come about? You wanted to donate money for people who didn't, what was it again? You something that annoyed you obviously online in your curmudgeonly state, you decided to award people for not doing something?
Yeah, well, just in general, just in the slowdown, I put a couple of weeks ago, I put together a list of all different ways you can support the different League of Ireland clubs, and throughout this time, and not wanting to be a hurler in the ditch, I wanted to make sure I put my money where my mouth is. But just in terms of the Finn Harps Association, I just happened to notice that a few clubs were doing kind of spot the ball contests over the last few days, and being that spot the ball contests are the worst thing since Jamiroquai, I decided that I'd offer money to any club that would promise not to do them, and Finn Harps being on the ball, they were the first to come out and give that guarantee. So they got my membership fee, and also Shelburne very graciously agreed not to do any either, and they've also got my Patreon. So you know, my girlfriend's banned me now from giving any more money to football clubs for the foreseeable future. But I guess it just goes to show, if any League of Ireland club is listening at the moment, that it really pays to listen to them, to listen to your critics, and don't ever do spot the ball, because it's awful. Stop.
I like how there's, you know, there's a punk movement, then an anti-punk movement, and you know, this is innovative movements by football clubs, and you're on the anti-innovation bandwagon. So that's good to know. Dave, thanks so much for taking the call.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much for listening in. We're going to keep on trying to put these shows together. As I said before, we are we're going to need a few suggestions, I'm sure, at some point down the line. There's a good chance we will be diving into some classics, a little bit like we did with our advent calendar at some point. So it won't necessarily be great match here or there, it'll be sort of era or player or something like that. Make sure to go back and check out the advent podcast as well if you are a little bit stuck for content to listen to that obviously around December. And of course, iTunes ratings, all that kind of stuff that we're always supposed to ask for, but I usually forget. Anything like that is much appreciated. It helps us sort of introduce ourselves to new listeners at a time like this. So Dave, thank you. And thank you very much for listening. Thanks to Kevin Burke, Tom O'Connor as well. And we'll speak to you hopefully next week.